Hi guys, and welcome to another episode of The Moonalogues. Hello world, hello change. Ah, a new week, a new chance for optimism, hope, and trust in humanity. Or not? What's your political affiliation? Are you friends with someone from the other end of the political spectrum? Do your friends all share your views? Or are you friends with people who see the world completely different from you? In most cases, we humans surround ourselves with like-minded people. It's easier when we share the same values, when we want the same things, and have similar understanding of what is right and what is wrong. Because it makes communication easier. And the easier communication is, the easier life gets. In today's episode, The Secret of Game-Changing Conversations, you'll meet Mark Meckler, a member of the Tea Party Patriots. And you'll meet Joanne Blades, who describes herself as a progressive living in the progressive bubble that is Berkeley, California. Mark and Joanne had a conversation, a game-changing one. A conversation, as Mark Meckler put it, that helps people to see that they have a lot more in common with those they've been told by politicians and the media that they should hate. So the next 20 minutes are going to be all about communication. In our daily lives, as well as with people who see the world a little differently from us. I'll share with you one secret of game-changing conversations, and you can find out how this secret can make a real difference, as we'll have a look at examples from Denmark and the USA. Ready? Then let's do this. Communication. Communication is a funny thing, really. We use it daily in various ways. Body language, sign language, words, both written and spoken, and even sung. Philosopher and communication theorist Paul Watzlawick said, "You cannot not communicate. For even when you are sleeping, you communicate. You communicate that you are sleeping and are therefore not available for a game of basketball or a deep conversation. So while communication is everywhere, it is still the thing that causes us a lot of trouble. Communication or miscommunication leads to misunderstandings, which can lead to arguments and cause conflicts. So if communication is happening all the time and all over the world, why then is it so tricky? Communication is a way to express ourselves, our needs and desires. Communication allows us to show ourselves to the world, and we hope that in return we are seen, heard, and understood. Understood, not judged. But that's usually when communication gets tricky. Even under best of circumstances, when two people share a common cultural background and speak the same language, there is still plenty of room for misunderstandings. For instance, if I told you that I had spent a lovely afternoon sitting underneath a tree, what tree do you think of? If we don't live in the same country or region of the world, you might think of a banyan tree, and I might have a pine tree on my mind, and another person might think of a maple tree. And even if we lived in the same country, there is no guarantee that we think of the same tree. You might think of a willow tree, when I actually had a Christmas tree in mind. While you might argue that this is just semantics and lack of precision, it gets even more complicated with other words. For instance, what do you mean when you use the verb to understand? You could be referring to the auditive aspect, aka, could you hear what I said over all the noise? It could also mean to know the meaning of something that someone says, like understanding a foreign language. Another meaning of the verb to understand is to know why or how something happens or works. For example, some people understand how to split an atom. I'm not one of them. A fourth meaning of the verb to understand is to know how someone feels or why someone behaves in a particular way. And then there is also the meaning of realization. It's that moment when you get why something someone else says or does triggers you. You begin to understand yourself because you see the connections. Some understanding happens through abstract thought. Other understanding happens through placing yourself in someone else's situation metaphorically. And yet another part of understanding happens through experience. The most drastic and clear example of understanding through experience is when someone close to us dies. There's a scene in the TV show Grey's Anatomy which shows this perfectly. George has just lost his father, and his, well, sometimes friend Christina approaches him. And Christina says, "There's a club, the Dead Dad's Club, and you can't be in it until you're in it. You can try to understand, you can sympathize, but until you feel that loss. My dad died when I was 9. And George, I'm really sorry you had to join the club." Having gone through the same experience has a completely different impact on understanding than mentally grasping the concept of losing a parent. Life, however, is such a diverse playground that we won't necessarily make the same experiences. There are millions of human experiences possible, some of which every human being will share. But even if we experience the same thing, it doesn't mean we react to it in the same way. Because we as human beings are unique in our way of feeling, seeing, and understanding the things that happen around and to us. So how to bridge this difference in experiencing life uniquely? How to create an understanding that goes beyond the mental aspect of understanding words that have been spoken? One approach is active listening. Active listening is used to bridging social gaps, which are unfortunately prominent in every country, in every culture on this planet. Social gaps are differences that disrupt society, some subtly, others more obviously. Social gaps run along race and ethnicity, class and wealth, age and generations, gender and bodily features. They run along education and political ideologies and religious beliefs. The result of all these gaps is that we stand on one side of the gap, and people who are unlike us stand on the other side. And we form stereotypes of the so-called other. We have ideas, concepts about them, without actually knowing them, without understanding them and their position, without meeting them. In order to form a solid ground to build understanding, we need to be willing to meet the other. And then to listen. Active listening is one of the buzzwords in communication these days. You find it in different fields such as change management, in therapy, and even the FBI uses it. Chris Voss, a former negotiator with the FBI, stresses the importance of active listening. When people feel listened to, they tend to listen to themselves more carefully, he says, and they openly evaluate and clarify their own thoughts and feelings. They tend to be less defensive and oppositional. They listen to other points of view. Active listening doesn't mean to sit quietly, although this is part of it. Active listening means to ask questions to get a better understanding of what the other person is telling you. And to come back to the tree example, instead of assuming we are thinking of the same tree, we need to ask, "What tree did you have in mind?" Active listening includes methods such as paraphrasing and mirroring, but goes beyond that. As an active listener, you also observe the nonverbal behavior and body language, the tone of voice, for instance, and it includes to actually remember what the other person said. Active listening is a skill we need in our daily lives in order to understand each other, be it at work, in our family lives, or in society as a whole. It simply means to listen without interrupting the other in order to share your perspective, your story, your ideas. A lot of times when people have a conversation, they are just waiting for the moment when they can respond and share their story. Imagine talking with someone who tells you about their last holiday when they had an accident and broke a leg. What usually happens is that our mind runs wild thinking of a time when we went on a holiday or had an accident. While our mind looks through our memories to come up with something to say, we are not listening to the other person. We want to jump in and speak ourselves. We want to share and we want to be heard. So a conversation might turn into an elegant back and forth between individual experiences. But in order to make a conversation great and give it the potential to be a real game changer, listening is key. This approach is also pursued by the Human Library, or the Menneskebiblioteket, as it is called in the original Danish. Founded in the year 2000, the organization brings together people from a wide range of backgrounds. But the people don't simply meet. The people present themselves as books. Because each person has their own personal story, and whoever is curious can learn about it at the Human Library. All people judge, so we're not here to change their minds or tell them not to judge, explains Ronnie Abigail, one of the co-founders of the Human Library. The Human Library is a safe place where people present themselves as an open book to you, the reader, and they answer your questions. An encounter at the Human Library goes something like this. You choose a story you would like to hear, and the book, aka a person, tells you their experience and answers your questions, without judgment. You're allowed to ask all the questions that you might have on the story you just heard, because by asking and showing sincere interest, understanding unfolds. The stories you might hear at the Human Library cover a wide range of topics. How does it feel to live with HIV? What is it like to live with schizophrenia? What is it like to be transgender? What is it like to be a single parent? What is it like to be a drug addict? What is it like to have converted to Islam? What is it like to give up your child for adoption? What is it like to be homeless? How do you reintegrate into society after having been in prison? What is it like to be a prostitute? Like a book that you don't judge by its cover, at the Menneskebiblioteket, it's the person that matters, not the label we as a society put on them. It's simply about meeting another person and getting to know them. To understand where they have come from, what they are going through, and to get a peek into their lives through their eyes. But it's not a one-way street. The human book gets a new perspective on their own story through the reader's questions. To share your story, your personal experience, is not always easy, because it makes you vulnerable, because it can make it painfully obvious that you are different from whatever society has decided to call normal. However, by sharing your story, we rewrite the norm, because whatever the norm is, it only exists in our head. The human book gives a voice to people who are often not part of society because of their otherness, explains Ronnie Abigail. We need to stop being afraid of that otherness and see it as a resource. And after a pause, Ronnie Abigail adds, there's a strength in diversity, but only if we embrace it. And then it's up to you. Maybe the encounter with someone else and seeing the world through their eyes for a couple of hours makes you question your perception of people who are different from you. Maybe you discover that you have more in common than you thought. And maybe, just for an afternoon, you connect to another person who was a stranger before. The Human Library started out in Denmark more than 20 years ago. Since then, there are human libraries on all continents. Events take place in 85 countries, from Egypt and Peru to South Korea. A Human Library event has even taken place in Mongolia, and they continue, thanks to social media and creativity, even in COVID times. For if people can't meet in person, then they'll meet digitally. Because sharing stories and being open works, anytime and anywhere. Because everyone has a story to tell, and they're exciting if you get involved and are willing to listen. And if there's no human library in your country yet, well, maybe, just maybe now is exactly the right time to create one in your own country. Another way of experiencing being listened to, listening yourself, and building a bridge over social divides is by joining a living room conversation. Living Room Conversations is a non-profit organization which is based in the US. It was started as a pilot in 2010 by Joanne Blades, who partnered with a group of dialogue experts to create a structured, intimate conversation format to empower everyday citizens to discuss important issues with friends with different political points of views. The principle of living room conversations is pretty straightforward, explains Joanne. Two friends with a different view each invite two friends for a conversation on whatever issue they have chosen into the living room. They are just really asking people to listen to each other. One of the first conversations happened between Joanne, a progressive living in Berkeley, and co-founder Mark Meckler, a member of the Tea Party Patriots, whom you already met at the beginning of this episode. And this sounds like two worlds colliding. In American politics, there doesn't seem to be a larger gap than between a progressive and a Tea Party patriot. Mark Meckler remembers the first conversation. The first hour was spent just getting to know each other. What are you about? Why does this stuff even matter to you? And as you answer these questions, the walls begin to tumble pretty quickly. So while the organization has its roots in bridging political divides through conversation, these days you can join a living room conversation on 12 conversation categories. And there are loads of subcategories. You can find living room conversations on topics such as education, faith, finance and money, but also on justice, the media, and environment. Under the category of culture and society, there are many subtopics ranging from abortion, gender, cancel culture, and questions of race to topics such as the search of purpose, technology, trust, hope, and empathy. Living room conversations are no longer limited to physical location. The conversations can take place anywhere. So a lot is happening digitally, while there are also conversations happening in cafes, libraries, parks. Basically, wherever people want to come together. Anyone can take part and host a living room conversation. All materials, including introductory webinars, are available on their website for free. I totally enjoy how mutual the learning and benefit is for all, says Lewis, a participant from California, describing his experience at the living room conversation. I learn as much from their perspective and experiences as they seem to learn from mine. At the start of each living room conversation, there's a conversation agreement to which all participants have to agree. It's the basis for having conversations on such hot topics as privilege, restorative justice, or Muslim refugees and national security. These rules sound simple enough, but are harder to implement, as Kate from Las Vegas admits. I learned something about myself too. How sometimes really listening and being present is hard. I hope to become better by participating more. The conversation agreement covers 6 basic attitudes to bring to a living room conversation. First, be curious and listen to understand. The second one is, show respect and suspend judgment. Third, note any common ground as well as any differences. Fourth, be authentic and welcome that from others. The fifth agreement point is, be purposeful and to the point. And last but not least, own and guide the conversation. All these 6 points aim at exploring how other people's experiences have shaped their values and perspectives. And at the same time, they ask of each participant to take responsibility for the quality of the conversation as a whole. It worked for Joanne and Mark, the progressive from Berkeley and the Tea Party patriot. They discussed crony capitalism and identified the need for criminal justice reform as an area of 100% agreement. They found common ground, a starting point to actively pursue a change in their society. Both Joanne and Mark were willing to step outside of the political bubble and meet the other. Game-changing conversations are not about winning an argument. They are about listening and understanding the other. Laurie, another living room conversationist, agrees. For once, I wasn't standing on my soapbox trying to win someone to my side or defend my stance with strong words. the ground rules threw all of that out of the window and put in its place a curious mind and an attitude for respect for my neighbors. Or to say it in the words of Sri Aurobindo Ghose, an Indian revolutionary and once considered to be the most dangerous man to the British colonial empire. When, O eager disputant, thou hast prevailed in a debate, then art thou greatly to be pitied, for thou hast lost a chance of widening knowledge. It's the knowledge you gain about another person when you really listen, why they feel the way they feel, why they are seeing things the way they do. And as was said earlier by Chris Voss, you know, the FBI agent, sharing your feelings and thoughts brings clarity to yourself. You get to know yourself better. And only by truly understanding yourself and the other can real change happen. For where there's understanding, there's a chance for bridging the gap. Any gap. And if you enjoyed this podcast, this episode, share it with someone with whom you have little or nothing in common. Maybe it helps to start bridging a gap. So I want to thank you. Thank you for listening. And let you know that I'm going out now to do the same, to actively listen to others, to someone who's very different from me. For listening is a gift I can share at any time, any place. I just need to be a little curious, a little patient, and willing to make a new discovery about others and myself. And from experience, I can share with you that I'll be rewarded with great conversations. Conversations that are real game changers.